Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words in the upper left-hand corner labeled Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also click on a link and download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and they've been curated out onto that page so you don't have to search for them. By Jeannie Rice, and you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they use these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it also tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, if you choose to press 1, it will put the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And that just makes our lives a little bit easier when people do that, when they comment about a past episode of this show they've heard, or raise a question based on what we're reading with the Way of Mastery, or just want to ask for some assistance in how to apply these tools in their lives. It just makes it easier for us to live into our intention with this work, and the intention we have is to be of service. So let us know what's been happening for you, what's on your mind, how it can be of service. We had a support group last night. I don't even remember if I mentioned the support group yesterday, but we like to let people know that we do have this offering of a support group two nights a week from 6:30 to 9 Central Time, and it's free. You can donate if you choose to help defray the cost of maintaining the websites, etc., but we've been making that available for free for, well, it's over 19 years now for the Tuesday group, and it's over 10 years for the Thursday group. And there are times when it's just a kind of a light review of material and hearing a speaker, and there's times like last night where there's a lot of deep process work that happens. So you're welcome to join us for any of those and or pass the information along to somebody who you feel may benefit from it. All the information you need to join us tomorrow night and or next Tuesday and or next Thursday, etc., is at MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And there's a separate information page for Tuesday login information and a separate page for Thursday. And we are always grateful to everyone who's joined us in that process and who makes themselves available to support others who are going through sometimes very deep processing. So I have gratitude for that group of people and for that process. And we have time before we start back into the Way of Mastery reading. If anybody has any comments or questions about the issues that were brought up yesterday, caller Bob had some comments and questions about the difference between privacy and secrecy. And that is such a powerful set of concepts and teachings, both in our culture and in the great spiritual traditions, that every time I go back at it, I recognize that the very simple distinctions I used to make between privacy and secrecy need some nuanced clarification by the time we're taking into account deep spiritual teachings like the Way of Mastery or the Course in Miracles. Also, where we left off yesterday in the Way of Mastery reading was right before another part that would tend to help clarify a question that came up last week. I think the question came up Tuesday or Wednesday. I suppose it was a week ago today that Audrey called and asked about this dynamic that happens in her Course in Miracles group, where they have people who frequently talk about how there is no actual world out there, and so it doesn't matter what they say or do because nothing really exists. And yesterday we were reading in Lesson 22 of the Way of Mastery, the second exercise in these two lessons is an exercise in self-honesty. And there are a list of these questions. Have I ever had a murderous thought, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down to have I ever hated God? And then finally, has any type of that kind of thinking occurred in my mind recently? And the more honest I get about this, the better my life goes, the more I see into my conscious thought process. And the part of my conscious thought process that I try to push away and deny, which some would call the unconscious. But where we left off yesterday was where the text reads, "But the mind that is healed has learned to turn and embrace every subtle shadow within the mind." Think about that. Can you turn and embrace every thought you have, every negative emotion you have. I remember the Tuesday group one time did a little field trip over to someone's house because of a problem at the church building, and we watched a video of a talk with Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti talking to hundreds of people sitting on a lawn. And in part of that talk, he said, we must learn to embrace our negative emotions the way we would comfort a wounded child. To my eye and ear, that's exactly the same message as we're hearing here in the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery was channeled years after Krishnamurti dropped the body, so it can't be that he was reading from this book. But this text reads, but the mind that is healed has learned to turn and embrace every subtle shadow within the mind. And by shadow here, we mean the thoughts we don't really want to look at, the thoughts that our culture or society would label as bad or wrong or, you know, too sexual or too passionate or too greedy or too violent. The mind that is healed has learned to turn and embrace every subtle shadow within the mind. For love alone embraces all things, trusts all things, allows all things, and thereby transcends all things. And love alone no longer needs to live in fear that those things can run it. The mind that has embraced all of the subtle shadows within it doesn't have to fear that those negative thoughts will somehow rise up and take control of the actions of the person. The text goes on and says, enlightenment is a state in which the world, and then there's a dash, a hyphen, and it says, and the world is not outside of you. The world is the context, the thoughts, images, and perceptions that you have attracted to yourself. Enlightenment is a state in which all of that can no longer hold power over you. The next paragraph says, it does not mean that it ceases to exist. This has been the great error of religion as opposed to spirituality. Religion will give you a set of beliefs, ideas about yourself, standards that you must achieve. Thereby, the mind concludes that, well, if I'm a spiritual person, I can't be angry. If I'm a spiritual person, I don't have sexual fantasies about my neighbor, etc., etc. This book says all of that is false. To deny, to suppress, to keep secret that you have sexual fantasies or violent fantasies or urges to eat gluttonously, to suppress that, to deny it, means your mind is not healed, means your mind is fractured. To embrace those thoughts and urges, to see through to what might be motivating and driving them, to understand and accept them without the false belief that those thoughts can somehow overtake you and cause you to act in a certain way. To understand through direct observation that you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment and to choose your actions in each moment. And it's the choice of your conscious awareness in each moment that creates your experience of life. You have the power to choose. It was given to you when you were created. It can't be taken away from you. You're going to have a flood of thoughts that run through your mind. All minds are joined. That means your mind has access to every torturous thought, every sexist thought, every racist thought, every violent thought, every loving thought, every world-embracing thought that any other mind has ever experienced. The text goes on and says, for in reality, The experience in your domain, which is within your mind, is one in which the mind has created and is aware of all things that are unlike love. It then splits itself off and projects an image called the ego. It projects that image to itself first, and then obviously to others, about what it most wants to believe is true. But remember, belief is not knowledge. Knowledge alone allows the mind to observe what arises within it without judgment, with total allowance, with acceptance, with embracing, with trusting. Knowledge alone, the text reads, knowledge alone allows the mind to observe what arises within it without judgment, without fear, without identifying with it. Knowledge looks upon the world in perfect forgiveness and says, ah, I just had a murderous thought. I had a picture of putting my employer, hitting my employer over the head with a sledgehammer and watching the blood spurt through the broken skull. Ah, yes, well, just another thought arising and passing away in this domain. It does not change the truth of who I am, and I am free to extend love or to hit him over the head with a hammer, close quotes. The mind that is free and at peace is no longer conflicted within itself. The mind that is unconflicted abides in perfect openness. The word they use here is vulnerability. I substitute the word openness for that. Perfect open honesty. The mind that is unconflicted abides in perfect open honesty. It has learned to embrace and accept the truth about the phenomena of the mind itself in this dream world that we inhabit. It is willing to begin to be honest and to cultivate deeper honesty with everyone around them. No longer is there any pretense. No longer is there any manipulation or control. There is no unconscious splitting off of energy actually running the show, even though that mind seems to be oblivious to it. The mind in conflict with itself is dangerous to itself, and of course, by extension, to everyone else in all dimensions. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, beware of those that come in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. Beware of the viciousness of the ego within your own mind. How does it come to you in sheep's clothing? Does it minimize hurtful behaviors? Does it minimize what is truly merely a lack of self-responsibility? Does it always make excuses why your life is not progressing in the way of becoming more and more empowering? Empowering to bring forth Christ? The text goes on and says, learn to cultivate self-honesty. Though it sounds like a simple thing, this does take time, simply because the mind has used its own power to be in denial about its own miscreations. It does not want to own them. It does not want to embrace them. It wants very much for you and itself to believe that it's really, really a very high spiritual being. And it will wear sheep's clothing of the ego, of the persona, the mask, the self-image, the projected image into the social world. And it will cling to that image like a robe around the body held against the cold winter wind. And it will cling to it no matter what. Such a mind is an insane mind. And an insane mind is hurtful. An insane mind limits the flow of love through it that could heal this world. Therefore, beloved friends, as we move toward the close of the way of transformation, we again bring the arrow back to point at ourselves, to point at the depth of the mind, and to learn to observe it. Take the list of questions that we have offered unto you and simply repeat that process on a daily basis. So you see, we first began in the safety of allowing you to look way, way, way into the past to see if any of that has ever been going on in the mind. Now we come closer and closer to the self-honesty of what is occurring in the mind right here and right now, so that each day you ask the same questions and you see what the answer is. In this way, the mind will become more and more transparent. You will learn to look upon your murderous thoughts and all of those hideous, unspiritual things that you've tried to shove down into the basement. More and more as you tell yourself the truth about them, and more as you find a friend or two willing to tell the truth about their own minds with you. The more the mind becomes transparent, the less and less you have any need to hide. A mind no longer committed to hiding becomes transparent to itself. And through it, the power of Christ can begin to move with certainty, with knowledge, with grace, and with compassion. The mind has always been the problem, but not the entirety of the mind, just a small corner that has been fenced off and called the ego. When you became identified with only that part of the mind, you became egocentric. The center of your identity became the ego, and that is the source of the problem. Quite frankly, it's like identifying with a pimple on the skin and then defending the pus within it at all costs. Silence is the doorway that will dissolve the pimple and that pus forever. Silence is arrived at in many ways, but the principal cornerstone is deep honesty. The act of transformation, then, the way of transformation, is a process whereby you put the squeeze on the pimple of the ego, and you no longer care what pus comes out because you just want to be done with it. Self-honesty is the greatest act of love that you will ever experience within yourself. Greater than any sexual union, greater than any adulation of the world, and greater than any mystical experience. The embracing of deep self-honesty, the mastery of it, is the greatest act of love that the mind can experience. For in perfect self-honesty, the world is transcended. Fear is dissolved, and enlightenment is present. And in enlightenment, there is remembrance of perfect innocence in union with all of creation. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, you who want in truth to come to know Christ, look not outside yourself, for the kingdom is within. The mind is your domain, and the mind is yourself. It has certain components, such as an emotional component or expression, an egoic component or expression. The ego in itself is not right, wrong, good, or bad. It simply is. The mistake, the knot in the rope, the blip on the screen, is merely mistaken identification of yourself with the ego. That is what creates a tension, a twisting of the rope that ends up distorting everything. You end up being in judgment of yourself because you had a sexual thought yesterday. Heaven forbid. You judge yourself because you feel a little angry. You judge yourself because a thought goes through the mind, quote, what's the point of being on the planet, close quotes. As long as you're identifying with those thoughts, you are in trouble. But when you see them as just an innocent flow, a temporary movement of energy through a vast domain called the mind, then you know that you are free. You begin to taste the spaciousness and the silence that always is around the edges of everything that arises in the mind. You begin to become identified with that spaciousness, with that peace. And there, wisdom returns gently. You begin again to remember that you were created to create. And creation is extension, not projection. Extension is that which floods or extends outward the good, the holy, and the beautiful. You no longer make justifications for not taking action to extend compassion to other minds in the world. But rather, you begin to wrap yourself around this world, around this planet, even around this universe. And you proclaim and know in the depth of your being that you are the holy offspring of creation and you will not settle for less than heaven on earth. No longer do the problems seem so large or complex because you abide in a state of truth and knowledge that is bigger than the world. For you know that through you, creation can do anything. If only you will direct your attention, open up the floodgates, and allow it to happen. You begin to step into the greatest place of power that there is. This is truly what was meant in even your Christian religion, that Christ returned to heaven and sat at the right hand of the Father. The one who sits at the right hand is the chief of staff, the one who makes it all happen. To sit at the right hand of the Father is to allow your mind to abide in right-mindedness. And in right-mindedness, you see no separation between yourself and your brothers and sisters, which means you see no separation between yourself and the world. Getting to heaven is no longer an attraction. Bringing heaven to this world is. Bringing light to darkness is all that matters. Constantly desiring to bring greater light to your own darkness is the way in which you live, moment to moment, desiring greater light, and greater light. Here's some good questions. What do I need to let go of? How deep can my self-honesty go? How wide can my compassion for life spread? What actions am I actually taking in this world? What am I defending? What am I afraid of? Am I willing to become so powerful a conduit for Christ that I take on responsibility for the atonement and I tell Yeshua to move aside? For the mind in right-mindedness serves only the voice for God. It no longer has any interest in defending the voice of egocentricity. Therefore, beloved friends, for the next 30 days, practice self-honesty. utilize the questions that were given you each day. Also, merely sit down with a pad of paper and pen and ask, quote, what thoughts have gone through my mind on this day? Close quotes. If you want, you can draw a line through the paper down the center. And on one side, you put loving thoughts, and on the other side, unloving thoughts. Remember, these are just your judgments about the thought. And see what comes up. I had an interview I did this morning with a gentleman, and he's written a couple books about quotes and famous quotes that have moved him over the years. And so we were on this topic of these quotes, and he said something about one of his favorite quotes in one of the books. One of the first quotes was from Einstein, where he said, we have to make a decision whether we want to see this world as a dangerous place or a loving place, a safe place or a threat place. And that launched us into this idea of quotes. And then he was talking about how powerful our labeling of our life events is. And then that prompted me to share with him the story of the three umpires. They'd had a long day of calling different games on a weekend, and they were meeting at the bar afterwards, and there were three umpires, and the first one said, well, you know, guys, there's balls and strikes, and I call them as they are. And then the next gentleman said, well, you know, guys, there's balls and strikes, and I call them as I see them. And the third umpire piped up, and she said, you know, there's only pitches until I call them as either a ball or a strike. Life is just this flow of events. It isn't good, it isn't bad. That's why a book like this, The Way of Mastery, can have an entire lesson titled, All Events Are Neutral. That's why the first axiom can be something like, you only experience the effects of your own choices. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. We label our thoughts, good or bad. So here's this exercise. You might want to sit down with a pad of paper and a pen and ask, what thoughts have gone through my mind this day? And just start listing the thoughts that come to mind. You might want to, because you were raised in this culture, you might want to draw a line down the middle and on one side put negative thoughts, on the other side positive thoughts. But the book is quick to remind us, a thought is just a thought. The fact that you had a certain thought is an absolutely neutral event unless you label it as bad or good. The text goes on and says, in truth and in reality in the physical domain and dimension, no one is without unloving thoughts. Just let that sink in. We like to think about we're supposed to be perfect, or we're supposed to be like Jesus, or we're supposed to be saint-like, and we're supposed to banish all these negative thoughts. This teaching, this set of observations says, listen, all minds are joined. You get impressions from people. You feel energies from people. You have dreams and nightmares and thoughts that they pop up seemingly without any antecedent, any precedent. Michael Singer does a whole section in his talks about, you know, living untethered, and in his online class about how when we try to grab onto certain events in life and try and push other thoughts and events away, we create a turbulence in the field of energy that we call our mind, and that turbulence has this churning, spinning energy, and that's what keeps producing negative thoughts as an automatic process. We aren't doing it. We aren't sitting there most of the time. We're not sitting there choosing to think negative thoughts. They just come to mind. This text in Lesson 22, Way of Mastery, page 269, the second paragraph on the page says, in truth and reality, in the physical domain and dimension, no one is without unloving thoughts. Why? Because the mind is a vast space through which thoughts like radio waves are passing constantly. Quite frankly, it says, we have spoken to you of this before. In the end, you do not really know who is doing the thinking. You are only aware of a thought arising in the mind. The ego says, quote, I am this and I am not that. This thought must be mine. That thought must be yours, close quotes. The text insists, though, it goes on and says, in truth, you're all swimming in the same sea. And there is merely thought arising and passing away. You do have the power to discern and select which thoughts will hold value for you. But it is impossible to push away what you have decided to judge as unspiritual thoughts. Can you imagine becoming so free that when a murderous thought arises, it makes you laugh and you tell the truth? For instance, quote, ah, when you reached across the table and you took that potato chip off my plate, I saw an image of taking a huge axe and just cutting your hand off and making you eat your own fingers. Huh, what a thought. Where did that come from? Close quotes. That level of honesty in our culture has been actively suppressed for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. But just pay attention to what that stirs up in you. I remember the first couple times I read this, I was just, there were sections of this lesson I didn't even want to read out loud. The murderous thoughts, the cutting the hand off, I had all kinds of other emotional issues. I had to do worksheets and tapping and breathing on to uncover childhood traumas and things, because just the thought of reading this, oh yeah, I had this thought of taking an axe and cutting off your hand and making you eat your own fingers, would make me sick to my stomach. If that kind of thing happens as you listen to these words, understand there's energy spinning inside of you that you're trying to deny and suppress. It may be connected to traumas in your past, physical, mental, emotional, sexual, etc. It's not coming up to torture you. It's coming up to reveal to you it needs to be healed. It needs to be addressed, released, allowed to flow through you. It's coming up for release. It's coming up for the healing of the light of awareness to be brought to it. The text goes on and says, for it is the embrace with perfect self-honesty that returns the mind to sanity. It is the refusal to be honest that creates the conflict and tension in the mind that is called insanity. And insanity is a state in which the mind is not at peace, and Christ cannot enter therein. So, again, the first few times I read this chapter and these pages, I was just repulsed. I was literally moved to feeling sick to my stomach. I've talked at various times on the internet show before about how I had this whole thing where in any movie where they showed any kind of a dismemberment, or I would turn away. There were movies I would not finish watching. There were movies I wouldn't even start watching if somebody would give me the heads up that, oh yeah, and this, you know, this one gets a finger cut off, or this one has a hand cut off, or whatever. I just would get viscerally, physically ill and feel like I was going to throw up. And I had work I had to do. I had hidden traumas that I hadn't processed from my childhood. And the more I did that work, the more I did worksheets, EFT tapping and breathing, Michael Rice worksheets, the reality management worksheet, the targeted journaling, the worksheets I did in the middle of the night on the phone app, I started processing this, and I came face to face with some of those earlier life traumas and what I had downloaded and made them believe. And lo and behold, I don't get sick to my stomach when I read this anymore. I don't get sick to my stomach or have that sick feeling, tense feeling in my stomach when I think about some movies in the past that either I quit watching or I didn't watch because somebody told me that there was a dismemberment happening or whatever. I've unraveled the beliefs and the traumas and the identification that I've had with some of those things. So this last paragraph again reads, "For it is the embrace with perfect self-honesty that returns the mind to sanity. It is the refusal to be honest that creates the conflict and tension in the mind that is called insanity. And insanity is a state in which the mind is not at peace. And Christ cannot enter therein. You can choose to hold on to your tension. You can choose to try and cling to certain thoughts and behaviors and beliefs. You can choose to try and push away certain thoughts. When you do that, you prevent the Christ mind from being your conscious possession. Because the Christ mind allows all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, and thereby transcends all things." The text goes on and says, "Many of you have come from a tradition that you call Catholicism. Within it, there is a practice called confession. This is really the idea of that practice, although, of course, it has been used to place guilt, and that is not the point. Confession means to be willing to be honest. The priest was meant to represent a symbol of creation itself or God or the Christ mind so that you could sit in your little box, which is really a symbol of going into your own internal privacy, and you could sit in your little box and telling the truth to your higher self, to the capital S self that loves you anyway, so that the mind of creation that embraces all things and transcends all things. You are honest through and through. You hide less and less till eventually you hide nothing from yourself." The text goes on and says, "Now in truth, that mind will tell you that you must go and say 947,000 Hail Marys and sweep the streets of the city. That mind, the Christ mind, the mind of God or creation, will not tell you you have to do penance. That mind will simply say, beloved child, you're already forgiven. I've already dismantled any false perceptions I might have held about you. I never created a false perception of you. I have always seen you as the extension of love of the creative energy expressing in form. I have already known you are incapable of doing anything that hurts yourself or anybody else. You are incapable of sin and all the rest. The Christ mind, the one mind, the Godhead, the mind of creation says to you, I see you as the shimmering radiance of the creative energy that you always were. I never created a false perception of you, and therefore there's nothing to forgive. Whereas forgiveness is the dismantling of a false perception." The text goes on and says, "You have returned to sanity by merely confessing to the deepest part of your capital S self, whatever it is that has arisen and passed away within the lower mind, the part of the mind that is associated with the body and the field of temporality. It is just like going to the depth of the ocean, into the silence thereof, and saying, quote, Yes, I was just out there on the tip of the foam of the wave, and I was a part of a lot of chaos out there. How about that? Close quotes. And the ocean remains as it has always been. The text goes on and says, lack of honesty in self leads to lack of honesty in relationship. And lack of honesty in relationship creates the tension and appearance of separation and guilt, which is the very nemesis that the soul is seeking to overcome. Self-honesty, then, the return to perfect peace, requires, in the end, the cultivation of openness, they use the word here, vulnerability, openness for, quote, in my perfect openness, I find my perfect safety. The way the text reads in the book I have in my hand says, in my perfect vulnerability, I find my perfect safety. But that's an oxymoron because the text over and over again says, who you are cannot be hurt. And the word vulnerable relates to being hurt. So to match the intention more closely, I use the word openness. In the end, what is required is the cultivation of complete openness, honesty, allowance, surrender. For in my perfect openness, I find my perfect safety. The text reads, the vulnerable are the meek, those who have returned to their own innocence and know that the opinions and judgments of others cannot harm them. They live merely honest within themselves, without pretense, without image, no longer concerned with this or that world, the insane world. They become more and more a conduit through which the power and love of creation begins to work. And through them, other minds are reached. Unbeknownst to them, they become a living, walking conduit, as long as the body lasts, through which grace is transferred to other minds. And in the presence of such a one, other minds heal spontaneously. Other minds are attracted to such a being, not because they're doing anything, not because they perceive themselves as great, but because they know that only creation is great. There is no longer a self that they are trying to defend. Everything becomes merely a context in which they can be used by the Holy Spirit to bring about the atonement. They walk in the world unknown by the world, unseen by the world. They seem very ordinary. They merely do as capital L love asks them to do. You are birthing Christ. Nothing can prevent it from occurring now. Merely trust each moment. Surrender into each moment. Embrace your commitment to capital R reality, or what Michael Rice would call actuality. Teach only love to yourself by loving that which you have hated and judged, by allowing yourself to feel and to know that which is passing through the mind and body anyway. Embrace it. See your ordinary humanness not as an obstruction to peace, but as that through which peace can be extended. Beloved friend, there is a great depth and a treasure awaiting you if you will put the message of this lesson into practice with passion, even zealousness, and with full commitment to your own Christedness, to see that you are worthy of the deepest honesty that you can reach, that you can confess, that you can live. For ultimately, the deepest honest truth is quote, I and my Father are one. I and my Creator are one. I am Christ eternal, close quotes. Beloved friends, be you therefore at peace this day and have fun with the exercises we have given you and know how much you are loved. Amen. And to make that happen, we have to get outside of the conscious logical mind. We have to go into, we have to be willing to step into an experience, because we cannot think about it and have it make any sense. This brings me back to the last thing I listened to of Dale Allen Hoffman. He did a couple weekends ago. He did a presentation in an online seminar called Ascension 2022, and he talked about, he was reading directly from the Kabbalist manuscript, and he talked about the word for God, which is a word that means all that is. And he talked about the phrasing in that original language was the one, the only being. There is only one of us. This is the wisdom that's contained in that ancient East Indian phrase, Namaste. Ram Dass had an explanation of it in one of his books. I think it was Grist for the Mill, where it said, Namaste. What this means is, I honor the place in you where the universe resides. I honor the place in you of light, of love, of truth and peace. I honor that place in you where when you go to that place in you and I go to that place in me, there is only one of us. Namaste. Deep spiritual traditions around the globe have known and taught and had different experiential practices to help people feel the truth of our connection. The indigenous American people talk about brother sun, sister moon, brother wind, the rocks, the trees, the deer, every creature is part of the Great Spirit, as we are part of the Great Spirit, the connectedness of all things. From the Eastern traditions, Indra's web, the concept of an underlying energy that connects all things, represented in the Western world and science by Planck's constant, the idea of an energy field that pervades all things. The silence that they talked about in this lesson is one, if not the only way, to introduce yourself to the experience behind the words that I'm saying. Quieting, or at least pulling my value away from the thoughts that run through the mind. I may not be able to quiet the mind, but I can certainly sit back and laugh at what flies through it. I don't have to give it a value and a priority. I don't have to identify with it. I don't have to think, oh, because I had this really raunchy sexual thought, that means I'm not a spiritual person, or I'm a bad person, or now I have to do some kind of penance or punishment of myself. The purification that is talked about in this work is the purification of turning the mind back on itself to uncover what I've been hiding from myself. The purification they talked about in Lesson 21 is an extended period of doing what Michael Rice would call a mind shifter. To just keep writing the statement, just keep saying the statement and being as honest as I can about what is within me that wants to argue against this truthful statement. It's truthful as offered by the Way of Mastery. It's truthful as offered by Course in Miracles. It's an observable thing if I gain the proper perspective to observe it clearly. And so I write on the piece of paper, it's not possible for me to be without love. It's not possible for me to be disconnected from my source. It's not possible for me to be guilty of sin. And all my cultural conditioning and family experiences are going to start bubbling up and say, well, that's wrong. That's not right. That's false. That's the purification. There's no punishment of me in this because I've had a bad thought. The purification that's referred to in this work is the willingness to turn my mind back on itself, to observe in total acceptance, allowance, and surrender every thought that goes through my mind. The more I do that, the more I usher myself into an experience of the connection to everything that exists. So, we're down to just the last few minutes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for going along on this ride. Please remember the support groups. Sometimes they're just relatively lighthearted and sometimes they're deep processing. Each one of them has been a great value to me over the years. We extend that to others openly. Please feel free to take advantage of it and or recommend it to other people that you think might benefit. All the information about joining us is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And again, it's free. You're welcome to donate if you so desire, but no one's ever been turned away for lack of money. And as always, we're very grateful for those who attend and those who are listening. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim, and thank you for the short notice yesterday playing the recording for us.
You're most welcome and deserving. Have a lovely show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of MindShifters Radio, and today is Wednesday, September the 28th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, what we had Dr. Tim play yesterday was the third hour of the Why book being read to you. And Michael reads his part in the book, and Graham Gibson reads the part of Richard. And it's really cool to listen to the book being read to you, and it takes on a different feel. But anyway, we hope you enjoyed that. There's a couple more hours left of that that we'll probably play when we are on the road to go to Missouri in a few weeks to see the new grandbaby. So for those who maybe didn't know, Michael's son, Michael J., and his bride, Jamie, had a little girl, Kaylee Jo. She's now, she'll be 2 weeks old tomorrow. And so we're going to go up there in a few weeks and visit with them and stop over in St. Louis and see the other granddaughters. And so we're excited about all that. And say a prayer for Aria. She has been under the weather all week, running a really high fever, and Ryan has been able to stay home with her. And he was concerned that whatever she had was very contagious and he didn't want us to get it and maybe take it to Dad. So we have not seen her this week except by FaceTime. So continue to hold her in prayer for total healing. Hopefully she'll be a little better tomorrow and we'll get to see her. Anyway, Michael still hasn't dialed in. I'll step in there and check and see if he's having any technical difficulties. In the meantime, I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and there's just lots and lots of information out there. And just browse around. Let us know if you find something that's not working or if you have any questions. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that we get to be with you. And hope you enjoyed listening to the third hour of the recording of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The edit has begun, by the way. I've got my new computer set up and files transferred. So working on the newest version of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And unfortunately, you know, fortunately and unfortunately, we've published this book ourselves. So we don't have a publisher. So we don't have anybody that's saying, here, we'll give you money to take the time to do that rewrite. And so I'm thinking that what I might do, and if you're interested, let us know, I might set it up so that anyone who would like to support us with a donation, you know, specifically towards supporting the book, that we would give you, as the edits occur, updated copies of it so you can keep current with the latest of what's going into the book and give us feedback on it and be the first to have a handle on it. Of course, we're explaining it over and over on the radio show, so it won't be anything exclusive, but, you know, if the work's touching you, if it's making sense, if it's upgrading your life, then we invite you to consider whether support's appropriate. Since we stopped traveling, you know, that was our mainstay for 40 years, being on the road, and even though we paid our own expenses and the workshops were always offered free, or at least 96% of them were offered free, it was still the donations that came from them. We invited people, you know, as we're doing now, hey, if it supports you, support us. That's what kept us on the road for 40 years. That's what got Heartland set up and opened up. And, of course, Heartland sits there now with COVID going on with nothing but expense. And that's been about 2 weeks ago, threw out a $3,500 payment that we weren't expecting. And, you know, it just, it rocks on. It all adds up. And so if you're being supported and you're in a place where you can support us, great. Or if there's a project you can do, whatever it looks like. We're here to be supported in the vision that we have of taking this to every mind, heart, and being on the planet and developing all the resources that we can. One of the things I've been contemplating and looking at is how to set up something that will be eternally available on the web so that all of this work is dumped on the web, is available to everyone on the planet in as many languages as possible. If there are any of the tools that you've worked with and you speak a language that we haven't gotten it translated into yet, that'd be another way to support it. Do a translation, send it to us. That would be awesome. About a couple of years ago, we were actually doing the radio show when Jeannie got an email from a young man from Denmark, and there attached was the whole book in Danish. He'd found it online free and read it, doing worksheets, changed his life, and said, here's my gift back to you. So we now have a Danish copy of the book online. If you happen to speak Danish or you know someone that does, then, of course, we don't speak the languages that the book is in online, so we really can't verify if every idea is covered perfectly or properly. And if you speak one of the languages that that has been translated over the years, and there are, you know, errors in the translation or in the understanding of the work, that would be another nice gift to give. It's like, oh, you know, I was reading the book in Spanish and I found out that, you know, whatever. If you've got feedback for us, that's another way to set up and support. And let's put it out there and together make this available, quite literally, to every mind, heart, and being on planet Earth. So that's what we're here to do. And, of course, we've pointed out many times what things can help you to become more cognizant of the work you need to do. Watch your words, regulatory speech. Watch what your speech is saying. You know, if you say, I don't want anybody that'll ever beat on me like that again, then notice that you're setting up a vibration that will pull somebody in to beat on you like that again, rather than, oh, what I really want is someone that's going to treat me lovingly, gently, and with respect. But if the automatic speech of the mind is in error, then note you're creating error, and it's good to have feedback to understand that. You know, if there's somebody in your life that's constantly feeding you back a particular information, you go, no, 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 you're in denial. No, I'm not, no, no, no. And you decide to honor truth enough to say, well, at least I could have a look. And if you notice yourself doing something repeatedly that you're being called on, it might be a place to go, oh, maybe there's some work for me to do there. And, you know, the game of having to win all the time is a big ego journey in this work that drives people a lot of times into the ground, because they want to admit they're in the, you know, there's a big fear conversation going on in a lot of the world, especially the Western so-called Christian world, about this one world religion that's being pushed. And few people realize the one world religion's been here for centuries, and it's rocking on in most minds, in most churches in America. This one world religion that so many people are afraid of is rocking on, and it is not focused in the teachings of the man named Yeshua. And the one world religion is that of blame and victimhood. That is the one world religion. And so if, you know, sometimes somebody gives you a piece of feedback and you go into blame and look what you're doing to me, and you're feeling like a victim. Oh, well, there's another thing I can notice. Maybe I've got some work to do. And the thing to really get is whenever you find that there's work for you to do, you're the one that's going to benefit from it. You know, the person who offers it to you, there may be an indirect benefit to them because, you know, something that brings up their irritation, although if it's bringing up their irritation, that'll be their work. But if it's being fed back and you go, maybe I should look and see if there's some truth to that, then, and if I'm, especially if I notice at that moment I ask myself that question or I'm invited to ask that question, I notice I'm holding my breath, I'm the one who's going to benefit. I'm the one who's going to heal by looking at that. And I'm never going to win by blaming somebody else for what's going on inside of me. But that is the universal religion at this point. It is the one world religion that everybody's, or so many people have talked about, fearing that some boogeyman is out there trying to set up, and it's laid right under them, and most people who have fear of that are practicing it. Taking responsibility, owning what's going on, looking for the patterns of error. And when they're there, rather than getting into your power person dynamic of, oh, that means I'm to blame, that means I'm bad, that means I'm wrong, that means I'm going to be punished, that means I'm going to be beat up, that means I'm going to be doesn't mean any of that unless you choose to make it mean that. It can mean, oh, here's my next piece of healing. How cool is that? And I can gently step into that state of willingness and healing rather than having to struggle with and blame somebody else and talk about how they're doing it to me. That's the universal religion. That's the one world religion that needs to be healed in each and every one of us. And we've all been brainwashed to practice it. And it's just to practice, it's time to give up and to step into the practice of cultivating our relationship with ourselves as love, of breathing and allowing that active presence of love to enter into our forms fully, to fully innervate every cell, every muscle, every fiber, every organ, every bit of tissue. And when love innervates that, when I can soften, breathe in and open in the presence of love, into a healed state. When I tighten up because of something you've done, at least that's what my brain tells me, I'm now back to the state of denial. I'm back to the one world religion, blame and victimhood. There are major sources of worksheets for virtually everybody to be able to give that one up and step into. Just step into the truth of who you are. as the active presence of love. And living as that active presence of love, your physiology gets to play in the realm of joy and aliveness. And another one that kind of shocks people when I talk about it, eternal life, because we're designed for that. And we recognize that we're designed for that, then we realize that, oh, if I'm in the game of somebody hurt me, I might shift that thinking into, oh, somebody's showing me what's inside of me that hurts me. And now I can start to correct my thought disorders and walk in the direction of healing. Pained perceptions come from pained content. That's all. There's no other source. Nobody else can do that to you. Shy of punching you in the nose. Yes, somebody else can hurt you if they reach out their fist and punch you in the nose. But then there's another level of that one, too, of what part of me holds a space that lets somebody in to punch me in the nose? There's my next piece of work. But as far as pained perceptions, pain perception always comes from pain content, not from that which stimulates the pain content to activity. Denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is the cause of what's moving inside of us, causes us to dissociate from the real cause and then project that cause. And it's time for us to change that game. Step into in real relationship with the presence of active love. And own what's going on inside of us. Awakening to the work that needs to be done. I mean, it's urgent to do if you actually want to live, if you want to be healthy, if you want to let go of that, you know, age-old game of dying. Energetic patterns, usually from genetic and early life traumas, must be faced, processed through, and removed from the structure. And remember that, you know, life's purpose is to kick us right square in the limitation, to show us exactly what we need to face and heal. And it is a master at doing that. And once one owns that, oh, I'm feeling it, it must be mine. If they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If I have pain and I think it's their problem, maybe I'm in denial. How will you know? You know, we've got this test for determining whether or not what you're feeling is yours or not. The test goes like this. Are you feeling it? That's all you need to know. You will know it's yours because you are feeling it. So renouncing this religion of blame, ownership of what's one's feeling, in that state becomes obvious. And the conversations of others being at cause just ends. And once denial is overcome, then the removal process begins. Remembering that the removal process is called forgiveness. Ultimately, everything unlike the presence of love must be uprooted, faced, and forgiven from your physiology. When you go back to the ancient teaching, it said, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. That wasn't a bleeding heart statement. That word heart there is the unconscious. You must go in, find in your unconscious that which you've been hiding from yourself that's causing your pain, and learn to forgive it. Apply forgiveness to remove it. There's no choice about what's going to surface once you step in. You know, you may think, oh, well, it'll be acceptable if I face this or this or this, but boy, I'm not doing that one. You don't have a choice about that. Just step in with full-blown willingness. And a new level of vitality will automatically kick the process off of bringing up whatever it is that you need to heal. And at the same time, each new depth of the experience of the presence of love, each peak experience, each new level of vitality will result in a healing crisis. down to the level where you're going to have to look at the next depth of what needs to be healed. So it's continuously moving into new levels of commitment, to remaking the commitment to do one's work, because the only option is a dangerous, deep, slippery trap of blame. Each new mountaintop means that the next depth of unresolved energy is going to surface. When people say, well, if that were in me, I'd know it. No, that's why they call it the unconscious. It's because you don't know it. Sadly, few, unless properly guided, because the blocks to maintaining the insanity are so painful to face, will actually ever reach their goal of living in that space. To live fully in this profoundly wondrous state of connected love for more than just a second until the next layer comes up means that energetic patterns, genetic and early life, are going to surface and need to be faced and removed from the structure. Everything unlike the new desired state that you want to live in, that you realize is possible, must be uprooted, faced, and forgiven. So we're here to support the awakening process. Everyone who tastes that deep, connected presence of love wants to live there. They want that awesome sensation to be there permanently, but few are willing to do the work required to maintain that. And each new level of the experience of self as love, as that's achieved, it happens because a new level of open connectedness has been reached. And every energy pattern that has ever interfered with that connected state is stored in the structure. And for most, due to the pain that comes with that toxic energy, it's been so deeply hidden away they don't even know it's there. How often has you started to do your work and stepped in and shed awareness of new energies within you, said, wow, I had no idea I was carrying that around inside of me. So the unresolved is loosed by new vitality. So vitality moves everything that would inhibit it. And that means toxic loads can now remain in hiding. That's why most people, when they hit that new vitality, run out and grab a drug, because the next layer that they need to deal with surfaces. When the unconscious dynamics are activated, they work their way into awareness, and sadly, rarely, they rarely show up in their true and honest form. Those dynamics were used initially to inhibit looking at the truth of a painful experience. Pain and blame were involved, and notice the person, you know, on the thousandth experience of raging at someone else, screams words like, you made me so angry, and they're right back in the religion of blame. Notice if you've ever said that, every time you said it, you're the only one that was there. It's about you, it's not about them. Anger is an internally generated state that belongs only to those foolish enough to allow themselves to be controlled by it. And, of course, we all have to admit we've all been there. So we've all got that foolishness within us. I love what Albert Einstein said about anger. He said, anger dwells only in the bosom of fools. David Bohm called unconscious activity, David Bohm was a physicist who worked with Einstein, called the unconscious the darkness of the human brain. And he spoke about the fact that there's a supreme intelligence that communicates through the mode of insight. But you can't have that mode of insight while you're in denial. Doesn't matter how many times you try to figure it out. You can't figure it out. 2,500 years ago, Jeremiah said, the heart is deceitful above all things. Who can know it? And virtually everybody's trying to figure it out. You can't figure it out. But you can forgive it. Unconscious state that's become the norm in our society is unnatural. Being controlled by it, quite literally being run by the darkness of the human brain, as David Bohm said it and Jeremiah said, it's deceitful above all things, is the reason that there's so much pain and trauma in the world. And virtually everyone makes their decisions based on this facade of truth issuing forth from the unconscious. It's all lies. So when hidden content surfaces, it reflects the next depth of pain that we need to learn to work through. But here's the trick of the unconscious. Those dynamics are instantly, transparently projected and integrated into the brain's perceptual construct of whoever's being blamed. So we're tricked by it, actually literally see it in form, massaged into perception, a picture of whoever, our religion of blame tells us is the problem. The object of attention in that situation is now perceived as a cause of the new depth of pain that has been accessed. And this is the most dangerous trap of doing one's spiritual work, because each time you hit that new level of vitality and that new layer comes up, the mind puts another trick, the trickster. Interesting, again, the word Satan in Aramaic means the resister, one who misleads. Of course, if you just had a new peak experience and uncover new layers of rage or grief or pain, the picture in your mind, having just had this peak, beautiful, connected experience, the picture in your mind is now showing you the truth, and you know you must be right. It's about them. And all that's happened is the internal dynamics have been massaged into a picture that looks like somebody else. So somebody says, well, I just had this wonderful new insight, this, peak experience. Therefore, my perception must be on track, right? Perception is a liar. This Course in Miracles says perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of truth, to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So somebody believes they found the real culprit in their lives. Blame, the kind of blame that I hated having done to me by my power person, is assigned to the object of attention, whoever my brain is showing me is the problem. And though I'm the one in pain and disturbance, my mind has final proof. They, you, them, you're the real problem in my life. This infantile solution to pretend to rid oneself of pain must be overcome. Correction lies in understanding that all mind constructs containing any form of fear, hostility, or even the slightest irritation are projections. So to maintain access to that new level of love, that new level of aliveness, one's recent peak experience, person must work through whatever has been loosed by the new level of vitality that opened what's been revealed and projected. If that piece of work is not done, The newly available unresolved associated content becomes the new root of the perceptual mind's output, and that projection becomes the mind's norm, becomes the view one has of the world. And the root of their suffering is accepted by being hidden. And the pain continues, but one insists that somebody else is the problem. So literally the whole world that we see, this world of false perception, is an internal construct that many get lost in for their whole lives. David Bohm at one point addressed what I call the power person dynamic. I don't know that he had identified it. I haven't seen that identified anywhere else on the planet, but this work. But basically, if we listen to David Bohm, here's a quote from him that would answer that. And that is, he says, anybody can use science and technology. I'll throw in, and that could use mean the tools of this work, without fundamentally altering his or her own frame of mind, which governs how they are used. That is, how the tools are used. And that's why most every teaching, we're told that a teacher's needed. If you're still believing that your mind, fueled by fear and hostility, could possibly tell you the truth about anything, you're sadly mistaken. An honest person, one who honors truth above all, cannot be fooled. Is there irritation, fear, hostility in my mind's construct? Thinking that construct is capable of informing me of anything true is foolishness. It's just varied the way that it shows me the content of my own mind. Again, David Bohm, I was writing a piece and came across some of his stuff, and he was so right on with it. He says a great many think they're thinking when they are just rearranging their prejudices. If your perception, and of course I'm going to include my perception, if our perception is disturbed in any way, Bohm's describing us with this thought. A great many think they are thinking when they are just rearranging their prejudices. So there was David Bohm half a century ago, who was basically offering the foundation of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And he had it nailed. I feel so blessed the universe reserved the title of that book for me. Why is this happening to me again? Actually, doing what it takes to unwind the intricacies of the power person dynamic and maintain the presence of love in the mind is a monumental task that few will ever achieve on their own. If anyone could ever get past that trickster on their own. What are we going to face? Well, I repeat it every once in a while. It feels like it might be time once again. There's a writer back in the 17th century named Francis Fenelon. He understood the work that needed to be done. He was actually a Roman Catholic archbishop, but he wasn't into churchianity. He was into supporting people doing their work. Early, early times, 1700s. What are we going to face? Why is it so difficult to straighten out and get this unconscious, this thing that Jeremiah said, nobody can rule that thing, nobody can tame it. What's in there? Here's how Francois Fenelon wrote it. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings, like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we had harbored such things and stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we're filled with horror. And then he offers some encouragement, and he says, bear in mind for your comfort that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. Actually doing what it takes to unwind the intricacies of the power-person dynamic and maintain the presence of love is what this work is all about. And we're here to support every mind, heart, and being on planet Earth being able to carry that out and to do that work. So we're honored and delighted, and I breathe with you. We're here to learn, to educate. I've applied in the past the idea of being a teacher, but I realize that's not what this is about. It's about education. And the word educate comes from root educare, which means to draw out. It does not mean to put in. The truth of you is already whole and wholesome and awesome and just the ultimate presence of active love. That's the truth of you. All the lies you bought into, all the things that move in you when you're miserable and, you know, maybe vicious with people, degrading, kidding, verbally or emotionally destructive of others, even if it's never spoken, if the thoughts just go through your head, guess where those thoughts come from? They come from your own unconscious. They are there to be forgiven. They are being shown to you by projecting them into your brain's image of someone else, that there's your work. The great trickster, Satan. In Aramaic, the word Satan is not the dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. The word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. Breathe on that one. The resister. And you watch the average person when they're asked to be responsible for what's going on, when they're just invited to look at something that they do repeatedly but live in denial of, they just say, well, just look, just notice it. What happens? Most people go into resistance. No, that's not me. That's not mine. Well, yes, I am holding my breath right now, but that's got nothing to do with it. It's got nothing to do with me. That's the first half of Satan. The second half, one who misleads. And then watch how somebody tells a story about how it's all, always somebody else's fault. Oh, and you know, kind of quiet moments, say, oh, yeah, boy, I got so much stuff, man. Oh, I did that personal code evaluation. Man, I was such a mess. Oh, man, yeah. But then notice how, until it strikes you that your work needs to be done, notice how then, when you're in your stuff, you can make it about somebody else. And you don't so readily or easily go, oh, yeah, I was a mess. No. When under the stress, when the stress is up and the chips are down, the old power person dynamic will come in and you'll simply play that out one more time. And that's self-destruction. So we're here to support the undoing of self-destruction and stepping into the truth of a human life, the truth that you are, contrary to the opinions your power persons fed into you, you are the amazing presence of active love. That's what's true about you. And that is what we're here to support. Holding space for the point where 7.5 billion people wake up one morning going, oh, that's who I am. And then functioning out of that. So that's about all I have to say for now, Miss Jeannie. Do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? If that's aroused anything for anybody, push one. Let's have a conversation about it. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you call in to the phone, the show directly, number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show on your phone, and then push one, raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie can introduce you, and we can have a conversation. So, Miss Jeannie, how are you?
We do have a hand up. Area code 541,
awesome.
I believe it's Julie.
Hi.
Is this Miss Julie Matthews?
Yeah.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm good. I'm calling for support. I'm getting ready to write
this
down.
You got it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, thank you. lately, I've been telling a lot of people about this work, and it feels so good, and it's amazing. It just blows. And then in the back of my mind is this, yeah, but Julie, you're not doing your work regularly like you could be, you know, and then therefore, Julie, your life would take on the same energy that you're sharing with to these people that I know from the past. I do know from the past of doing my work. But, you know, sometimes I'm just not seeing my present work. And so I got a feel for it today, and I just want to give a prompt from you. I already feel okay, but I just want to share it, I guess. Today I'm getting in touch with my power person dynamic that happened as a child, which I've shared, and I'll make it as brief now, that I had to go to my room for sometimes half a day up to 4 days. I got it. And so that's my little story. But I'm getting in touch with my feelings of sadness and just how hurt I felt, you know, and then what I did to cover it up, just somehow, finally, once I cry, you know, that's my release, and it kind of changes my thoughts, you know, they're not spinning in the story or the lack of understanding, and I start to get some insight that, yeah, I really just feel hurt and really hurt, you know, and the thing is my parents never really resolved it afterwards, you know, after I served my punishment, they didn't, you know, reconcile with me what was going on and let me express instead of getting punished for being expressive to the point of, you know, a tantrum or whatever it took to scream and yell because
right.
Nobody was listening. So,
nobody's
anyway,
listening.
And Michael, you know, I think I mentioned in another conversation that the idea of density and destiny and those letters are identical. They're just rearranged. And I actually am doing my work. I'm looking at how to get out of my density so that I can move into my destiny, you know? And so I got a message one night or one morning from Spirit that it was so amazing because I didn't, you know, sometimes you get a message from Spirit and you realize, wow, somebody's actually listening to me and what I'm dealing with here. And it told me to lessen, let's see, how was it? It was to look into lessening the density of my caring. And I thought that's really strange. You know, I never got anything quite like that. What does density have to do with caring? And what does caring have to do with density? And so I've been in that for about a week. And getting insights. And now I think I've peeled away to this layer. And, you know, removing the density of what I covered up my hurt with. and the rejection I felt.
That's what forgiveness does.
And the lack of the resolution I had never got with my parents. Right. Yeah, it does. It's working. And so, so here I am, moving to a foreign country and having to go through a whole lot of density that I've surrounded myself with, which was basically buying power of things for a whole lifetime. You know, I'm surrounded by things and a fair amount of clutter. A lot of it's gone to the dump, but I need to take the rest to the dump, and I have resistance and blockages about how important all this stuff is. And this is the caring thing, right? I care too much about it, you know, that it's the density of it is what I need to release about it and live at a in the light of truth, you know, in a lighter way of seeing. And so I'm just acknowledging the hurt that I really felt as a child in my age of like maybe like 10 to 12 years old. And I got those punishments.
Right.
So, and then, and so my arms have been so like tense. They don't want to lift any more boxes or heavy things. And I'm starting to feel a release now as I'm breathing that they're just like, they're lightening up, but they still have work to do. I still have work to do. And it's hard to be inspired about it. Like, oh boy, I get to go do this. So I'm just in something here. And that's all I need to say, I guess. Thank you.
Well, if you remember what the physicists say about matter, you know, the matter is non-existent. What we've called matter is energy reduced in its rate of vibration, or we could say brought to a new level of density. And so all those punishment times when you didn't know to breathe and you didn't have the tools, those energetic patterns of being judged, of the pain, the sadness, the loss, the whatever all the dynamics were, became dent, became literally part of your structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the place to make sure to continue to breathe, keep your throat open, keep the structure softened, and let the breath go through and literally upgrade the density of those patterns back to light. And it's the breath that will do that. It's the forgiveness process that will make those energetic patterns available.
Okay, that's starting to work, and so, all right, so I need to keep in this space that you just described and be a space of love to let it move through me, and I'll be guided rather than, I'm just even by calling you, I'm trying to figure it out, you know, I'm trying to help me figure this out, you know, and that's not the mind to go into. To really
well, you're asking for help to figure it out or to move through it. I get it's more about moving through it than figuring it out.
Yeah. So, okay.
And notice where you started out with this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
With a judgment about yourself. And it probably is simply replicating the power person judgment that was put on you in those early times.
Uh-huh. What's wrong with me?
So if your power person kept giving you messages of, yes, what's wrong with you, or here's what's wrong with you, and here's what you should be doing, and you're not doing it. So notice mm-hmm. your tendency to replicate that, oh, I'm not doing my work.
Oh, yeah.
And just notice, you know, if that's true, then heal that thought and move forward and do your work. If it's not true, acknowledge, oh, I'm just playing. This is just the processing out the density of those judgments that I didn't know any better than to hold my breath in the presence of and just accept from my power person. You know, when the stress was up and the chips are down, field opens, and you just suck all that in, and all that's going to have to be processed back out again, removed from energetically from the dense energy that it has become through experience back to light through the breath.
Okay. So I just got an insight too. Another one of the dynamics with my parents was that they were splitting up and getting a divorce ultimately. They declared it when I was 12, but it was building up. And this is really big, I think, for me. I live in an upstairs apartment over a garage, and I have stuff in both of them. So they're both my rooms that I'm confined to till I finish. I'm punishing myself when I say that, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the split-mindedness, too, the energetic split-mindedness that I went through between, you know, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? So, you know, what did my mother think that I did wrong? What did my father think that I did wrong? Which parents' dynamics do I have to please? Do I have to find the way back to love with? You know, I got caught all in that dynamic of still outside of myself wanting someone to tell me what to do. So my mom's telling me my upstairs, my dad's telling me my downstairs, for example. And I just get confused going up and down the stairs. I forget, you know, I'm in unconsciousness about it. So now I see that that's what's going on, that is running me instead of me joyfully doing this and looking forward to, you know, what's next in life. Even that isn't exciting to me yet, because I'm in this mire of old energies. Did that sound realistic? I think it's the split-mindedness.
I think you're on track.
A clue to where my split-mindedness comes from. It's trying to please two arguing parents and how they project onto me, or how they did. And I have the residue of it. I'm just going to breathe and get this out. Let it move.
There you go. There you go.
Tell Aria Rain what I'm doing. Tell Aria Rain I'm doing this so that I can be love.
There you go.
Thank you. Okay, well, I shared my depression, and I'm encouraging, I don't know, you know, Michael, I'm meeting so many people who love hearing the words that I share about this work. They're so lit up with hearing how this work will enhance anything they've already learned in life, you know, whether they've been brought up Christian or not. And, you know, I really try to give the work objectively while also acknowledging where it came from. So it's pretty cool that I'm at that stage. I almost feel like I'm creating a following of people who I will stay in touch with by email, and it's weird. I didn't have to do anything to promote it or advertise it. I'm just gathering by the sheer energy of the truth that I am able to live, even though I have these barriers that I just described. But now I'm already feeling better. I'm getting better out of the density. So now I feel empowered to look into the density of what's really here in front of me and the task at hand. And that's all it is the density of me layering too much caring onto it. Where I really care is the connection with source.
Is it really too much caring or too much fear?
Well, it's a density over the caring. The caring is pure and true and all right. You know, I care deeply about everything and everyone, you know. And however, if I actually get to remove this layer, it won't be a wall. I'll be more accessible to myself and others, which is what I really care about. Oh, I think. At least it looks that way now. What was your question?
Just breathe and stay with it.
Okay. Well, the fear you asked about, yeah, I fear for my survival, and that this will get the best of me. When actually I hear those words now, if I would have done a worksheet, and that's a belief, and if I believe that, it keeps me from realizing that the best, nothing can ever get my best except me, and I can get it by loving it and giving it.
Again, it won't be loving it. It will being love in the presence of it. Remember that loving isn't a verb. It's not something we do. But if I can be the space of love, anything that surfaces in the presence of active love that isn't true dissolves.
Right.
Telling yourself the truth, being with the truth, letting the raw energy surface. And now that the truth is told, there's room for real love.
What did you just say? The last phrase, something will be...
Now that the truth has been told, there's room for real love.
Oh, room for real love, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's all it takes. Okay, so...
the core of it all.
The hurt, it's just the hurt that how deeply I cared. The hurt of being thwarted or sidetracked by my parents' energies trying to control me, I guess. Okay. I'm breathing, yes, and I'm gonna continue with this today, and I already feel like things are moving me in the right direction. So I'll just
And remember that breathing is more important than trying to figure it out.
Okay. I think I'll be able to look at things more impartially, yes, if I stay in touch with the breath. Is that the word, impartially, like more neutrally?
Yeah, like I think that works.
With less density.
Become the thinker. The thinker apart from the thoughts, the feeler apart from the feelings, and the actor apart from the actions.
Oh, yeah. And so I don't, that will help. That already released me from pleasing mother or father, pleasing myself. I'm just moving.
That's a big, big and important piece of work.
Yeah.
So nice catch. Nice.
Thank you for guiding that. Oh, I really appreciate it. So I heard your request earlier for donations, and I wanted to ask you, isn't it time to renew my subscription to the Mindshifters group?
I think we're about there, yes.
So would it be the same as what I paid last year?
It would. That would be perfect. That would be very helpful, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So I would encourage everybody, if 10 people were willing to put in $100, you've received at least that much support. And believe me, I just did. I received about $1,000 worth of support right now. But anyway, that would really help. If 10 people did $100 or 20 people did $50 or 10 people did $200, you know, these are small amounts these days. Even though they take a lot from each individual to make a commitment to create that. I'm not taking it lightly that if there are hard times. I acknowledge, I'm not going to say not. I acknowledge there may be hard times for people, but whatever you could do would make a difference in your breathing even, I think. So I'm moving through my resistance, and I'm going to send you some money. And thank
you. Well, much appreciation for the support. All right, young lady. Delighted
okay.
and honored to be on your team and to have you on ours. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Blessings.
Okay. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, looks like we've got 3 or 4 minutes left.
We have 3 minutes, so if someone presses one, you're first in line without waiting. And Bob just asked in the chat room how long we've been running these shows, and I said we began January 31st, 2011. So we've been doing it over 11 years, going on 12.
Yay. 4,000 hours or more in the archives now. How are things down under, Bob? Hope all is well. So do we have anybody out there with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? Or, sweetie, do you have any thoughts to share?
No. It's all good. Nobody has a hand up. No further comments in the chat. Does anybody have a question? And thank you, Julie.
There in listener land, we've got time for a quick thought or a quick question.
Really quick question. We got 2 minutes.
Yes. And if there isn't, then let me explain what Julie was referring to. She's been a member. We have an annual membership in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club that we do on Zoom once a month, the second Saturday of the month at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. And then the Tuesday after that Saturday at 7 o'clock Eastern Time in the evening. And so that's a 1 year program. And so Julie was talking about renewing her year for the next year, participating, and we gather. And it's a sweet group, small group, but really sweet, connected group of folks that are really there for each other. And so if you're interested in joining that, you could drop Jeannie a note, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let her know you want to participate. Give her your phone number. And the one of the core and most powerful tools that we teach is the Still Point Breathing process. So this ongoing workshop keeps people in tune with and in touch with using the breath. And oftentimes it's difficult for people when they're on their own to really get the Still Point process going for themselves. And so by connecting in a group, it just moves things in a whole different level in a whole different way. So if you're interested in that, you can actually we'll be doing it on October the, do you have the date, Jean? Second Saturday of October?
The 10th.
The 10th. So you can do a one-time try of it, and one session.
Apologies, my calendar didn't flip. It's October the 8th.
October the 8th. So the 8th and then the Tuesday following. So if you're interested in doing that, you can do a register just for one session, and it's $150. Or you can do a package of 3 sessions, make a commitment to 3, and it drops from $150 to $125 per session. Or if you do the whole year, it's $900. And so, and that can be worked out if somebody's interested in doing that into some sort of a payment plan or what have you. So if you're interested in that, drop Jeannie a note. And in the meantime, get the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.